This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're through the holidays, now come the resolutions. Later in the show, we'll get advice on how to actually keep your resolutions to lead a healthier lifestyle in 2015. First up this afternoon, growing up on the Isle of Jamaica, Michael Foulkes was tormented by grinding poverty, physical abuse, and constant starvation. Today, he is a successful businessman and has established a foundation at his former elementary school in Jamaica to provide aid, along with encouragement and his spirit of optimism and can-do attitude to children. In his just-released book, Driven by Desperation, Michael Foulkes tells of his childhood and the path he's taken to get to where he is today. He joins us this afternoon to share some of his story and his outlook on life. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michael, great to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
And tell me about your early days in Jamaica and the kinds of hardships that you faced.
Well, growing up in Jamaica was not always difficult, but for the most part, I was raised by my grandparents, and we weren't wealthy. I've had to face hardship like, for example, not having food to eat on a daily basis. I've had the experience of not having real good clothes to wear or shoes to wear. You name it. I've just had a difficult time growing up there because it's a third world country, and my parents just weren't really wealthy. So it was a difficult time for me as a child growing up. However, the love and the care and the nurturing from my grandparents, it didn't make those difficult times seem so hard. I'm going to say my grandfather was and still my hero. So it made it tolerable. And it also created for me a deep desire inside to know that there was better and I could do better, and I needed to not just see my desperation as it really is, but to know that if I listened to him and follow his teaching, I could find my way out of it and make a better life for myself.
You know, at one point in the book, you say that your existence was pure hell. So things sound like they weren't particularly pleasant for you.
Well, with my grandparents, from age number, I would say six, four, up to age 15, wasn't so bad. The real hell for me started when I went and lived with my mom. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to even call her mother or mom. It was always referring to her as Sister Jean. So there were times when I didn't have lunch money for school, for example. And so you would have grinding headaches every single day from hunger. I was sustained really by just going to what we call a mango walk. And I would pick the mangoes, and that's how I would be able to sustain myself. If I happened to go into the refrigerator and take what we call cornflakes or milk, you would be beaten, because that was not for me. That was for my siblings, my half-siblings. So it was very difficult. She didn't really wanted me or my sister, who lived with her at the time, because we were past the age of staying with our grandparents. And if we did stay there, we would be subject to a life of farming. And at that age, our grandparents wanted better for us, so we had to go and stay with her. And the little that they could do to sustain us just weren't enough. And because it wasn't, she would definitely abuse us from a physical, mental perspective.
So what did your grandfather do for a living? He was a farmer, is that?
Correct.
Okay. Did he pass along work habits and values that helped you in life?
Absolutely. I would say even today, the teaching from my grandfather is what continues to sustain me and continues to drive me.
Now, if somebody goes on vacation in Jamaica, they might not see the poverty areas. There's some segmentation there. The countryside where you're from is typically more of an area that suffers from poverty than the other parts of Jamaica, correct?
Yes. Typically what you'll see in this city and the more developed area, you have some businesses, you have some very nice hotels now. It's more developed. So people are working and it's more of an industrial area. But on the in the countryside, you don't have that. You have people that are subject to farming and just barely getting by. So it's the difference is like night and day.
Now, you write in the book about looking out to sea, where you could see the ships that were leaving Jamaica. And when you were looking out to sea, what were you thinking about as you watched those ships?
Well, there's a number of things that used to cross my mind. At one point, I even contemplate just jumping in the ocean and be done with it. Because during those days, the reason I was behind the school watching the ships is because I couldn't eat. I didn't have lunch. So it was a way to hide from the other students and from the humiliation. So I would go behind the school, and then when I watched the ships, apart from thinking about jumping and doing away with the pain and the humiliation that I would feel, I would also think back to my grandparents' teaching, and I would think, you know, once there's life, there is hope. And I would get through those days one day at a time, thinking I may be able to escape one day on one of those ships. And in fact, that's how I actually entered the United States. I was able to, I was offered a job through a lengthy process with a well-known cruise line, and that's how I ended up entering the United States and working in Miami, Florida.
Your grandparents sound like they were a ray of hope in your life. What were some of the other rays of hope in your life and some of the other defining people in your life?
Well, from a Jamaica perspective, even today, I really have to say it's my grandfather. He is today still my hero. I do have an uncle that lives here in the United States. And at age 8, I remember him coming back to Jamaica time and time again. He was able to rent a car. He was able to buy people in the bar a drink. Everybody, he was able to dress well, look wonderful. And I used to think to myself that, you know what? I think I would love to be in a position like that one day. So that was also one of those defining moments. And for me, I had my eyes set on the United States. I wanted to get here and to share in the American dream.
Despite what you were facing, did you always have a feeling deep down inside that everything was going to work out okay for you?
Absolutely. And a big part of that is because of my faith. I believe in Almighty God. And so a lot of what I used to do, and I still do it today, I used to pray for health, strength, wisdom, courage, knowledge, understanding. Today I had health to that. But I would ask, and I would literally cry. Tears would stream down my face as I would go through those times. But for me, that was important because it used to get me through those moments.
How old were you when you started working in Miami? And how much of a culture shock was that to come to the United States?
I was 19, just past my 18th birthday. And it was awesome. It was amazing because, you know, my streets back in Jamaica are so much smaller. The buildings are so much smaller. And, you know, here I am at one point where I couldn't even eat. I'm getting lunch, dinner, breakfast, all paid for. I'm watching HBO and I'm drinking a soda pop and I'm kicking back in a room and it's all paid for. I'm thinking, wow, this is great. So it was interesting, but I've always thought to myself, well, one of the things my grandfather would say, mother may have, father may have, blessed is the child that has his own. So I'm always raising the bar and I'm thinking, okay, so what's next?
How did you get from working in Miami to building the business that you have here in Hamilton? What type of education and support and who helped you along the way?
Well, it's a lot of questions. transformation from Miami to upstate New York is where I started, was because of a lady that I met. And so we got married, and one thing led to another, and I became a permanent resident. Then years later, I became a naturalized citizen of the United States. I used to work, when I got my permission to work, or my permit, I started working 40 hours a week. I went from 40 hours a week to another job, so I was working 80 hours a week. Then I said, well, you know, I'd like to do a little bit more. And it was almost like freedom for me and this land of opportunity. So I took on a third job. So I was working about 108 hours a week.
Wow.
Then after a while, I said, this really isn't going to work so well for me. So here are the reasons why. Can't keep this up long term. So in addition to that, I am doing all I can and working really hard. These gentlemen that would come in from college, as intern, they would be my boss. And what I do, I got no recognition for. And to me, they weren't really that smart, even though they were college graduates. So I decided I need to go get that degree, because I'm always going to report to these guys that are really not that smart and certainly don't have any respect or appreciation for the work that I do to make them look good. So I stopped working one of my full-time jobs, and I started going to college. During the time, I started attending college. Now, for the first semester, I think it was English 101, did the best I could, worked really hard on my first paper. And then I got, I think it was a B minus. It wasn't such a bad grade. But I tried communicating with the professor. I said, listen, could you explain to me why this wasn't an A, or at least an A minus? And she was really unreasonable and treated me, I would say, with a lack of respect. So what I did was, I thought to myself, here I am in the land of opportunity, and working 80 hours a week, 104 hours a week, and the experience that I am gaining, and the people that I'm seeing, and the education that they have, putting all of that together, and now I'm in college, and I'm trying to get ahead as well, and nobody seems to want to really appreciate the value that I bring. You know what? I'm going to start my own business. Because one of the companies that I worked for recognized the abilities and jokingly said to me one day, if you had a warehouse, for example, we would do business with you. Well, I'm thinking to myself, I'm fresh off the banana boat. What do you mean? How the heck am I going to get a warehouse? But the funny thing is, it resonated. It stayed in my mind. And when you're backs up against the wall, you're talking to a guy or a young man at that time from serious adversities in his life, what I tend to do is let those things drive me. So I went back to him with a proposal, and I said, listen, if you're really serious about what you said, here's what I can do for you. So I know about, at that point, I basically laid a proposal down in front of him, outlining how I could save him some money. And he started looking at it and asked me to give him some time to think about it. But I was very persistent, and I continued working with him. And eventually, long story short, my company was born. And even today, after 17 years, that company is still a customer.
That's an amazing story. We'll continue our conversation with Michael Foulkes after the break. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining me this afternoon, Michael Foulkes. His new book is Driven by Desperation, which tells the story of how he went from growing up in Jamaica in poverty to being a successful businessman and philanthropist today. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michael, tell us about the foundation that you've created and the work that it does.
Okay. After writing my book, it's something that I've always wanted to do. I go back to Jamaica just to be inspired by my surrounding, because the way I look at life is you really can't know appreciation for who you are, what you have, unless you are reflecting back on the past and then the present and know where you want to be in the future. So as I do that, I always see these kids, and I was once like them, and I'm very blessed today. So I wanted to give back, and instead of just thinking it, I was able to go through the process of writing the book and realizing that, hey, you need to get this done now. So I started the foundation last April. So this coming April, it'll be 1 year. The goal is to literally teach those children that, look, I was once like you. I want to be an example for you. Don't allow destitution or poverty to make you feel like you can't be somebody or you can't get somewhere in life. Allow it to be the driving force to propel you to become who you truly are. Because the way I look at life, adversities, they're really just opportunities. Because if you look close enough, you can see those marvelous opportunities that exist in there. So I'm trying to teach them that be strong. You know, it's all about, for example, we have Mick, Mighty in Character. That means obviously strength, the moral characteristics of an individual. However, it also means you're not going to be turning you're going to get slapped on one cheek and then turn the other cheek to be slapped. It's about being truthful. It's about having faith. It's about being courageous. It's about showing kindness. It's trying to instill all of that into these kids, into allowing them to see that they are much more than what meets the eye. Open their imagination, because they're innocent, but at the same time, I believe very, very powerful if given the opportunity. And like my grandfather believed in me and taught me, I too am blessed enough to want to give back to my foundation and beyond that.
What's the name of the foundation, Michael?
It's the Melbourne and Michael Folks Foundation. Okay. Melbourne was the name of my grandfather.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, part of the title of your book refers to living the American dream, and there's debate over whether the American dream is something that's real or something that's just a myth. What's your feeling about that? What does the American dream mean to you based on your experience?
Well, you know, it goes back to your ambition. It's who you are. You have to align yourself with what you're good at doing. You know, success doesn't mean that you're going to wake up tomorrow and be a millionaire. It really means that you got to align yourself with the ambition that is right for you. Find your passion, your mission, your purpose, and work hard at that. The American dream is alive today as it is, 20 plus years ago when I came here. The only thing that changes, in my opinion, is time. We have no control over that. But what I realize is some of us, we don't have the ability to adapt and change with time so we can apply ourselves in order to share in the dream. It's still here, and it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from.
Even though you've made great progress from your life in poverty, do you feel like you still have more to do, and what kind of things do you plan for yourself out in the future?
Absolutely. This is only the beginning. You know, the way I look at life is every day is a new beginning for me, and I'm looking to take from here today, my encounter with you, some kind of experience. So you never know what the future holds. But for me, I think this is only the beginning. For me, I'm very blessed at this point. We talk about the foundation, but let me do this and let me say this before I forget. It's about my employees too, about the past employees, the present employees, and the future employees, the contribution that they have given to me personally and my company personally. I have, and I feel, not just to my foundation, but a moral responsibility and obligation to them. So I've made my success. Now it's about giving back on that level. And let me just say to my employees, thank you guys for making this possible for me today.
Do you have plans to write another book?
Absolutely. I will start the business book March of this year is my target. And there'll be more to come after that as well.
So this one will be business-oriented based on your experience.
That is correct.
How can people apply the story of your life to whatever challenges and hardships they might be facing in their own lives?
Well, the way I see my book is, and I'm going to do a video sometime this month to market my book on social media. But my book will show you how to turn desperation into wealth creation. If you look at it from, I would say, forget about the status quo. Think about how you approach things differently. You can't always look at things from a black and white perspective or what your book says. You have to look at it from a different angle, okay? It'll show you how to take, for example, bitterness, turn it into generosity, pain, turn it into forgiveness. There's a whole lot of benefits that I can sit here and point out to you from my book. So I would encourage people to get it, have a look at it, go to our website, provide some feedback, and tell us how it applies to your life and how it can allow you to be living your dream like I am today.
It sounds like the big message is not to be afraid of desperation, adversity, bitterness, all the challenges that come across the way in life. It sounds like the point of the book is don't be afraid of those things. They're actually good things that can propel you to success.
That's absolutely correct. And fear is the underlying adjective there. Because, you see, most of us, or all of us at some point, and we have fear. And if we are able to deal with our fear head on, what happens is your life continues to improve. You don't want to run away from them. And if you start to do that, you'll allow yourself the success that you deserve.
Michael, thank you for being here this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Local businessman and author Michael Folks, his new book is called Driven by Desperation.